What's up, everyone? Hello, my name is Rossi and I am back. Welcome to Rossi's Clubhouse. Guys, Rossi's Clubhouse is a Sacramento-based podcast. And what I do is I focus on interviewing all of the up-and-coming talents here in Sacramento, California. So I have a special guest with me tonight. His name is Trevor Harris. He's a writer and director, and we're gonna talk a little bit to him and about him and with him about everything that he has going on, you guys. All right. So let's meet Trevor.
Hello.
Hi, Trevor. How are you doing?
Good. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing really good. Thank you. So Trevor and I were backstage and we're talking. I'm getting to know him. So before we get into it, Trevor, why don't you tell us just a little bit about yourself before we get started with the interview?
Oh, man, I'm just, I'm a writer, I guess. Love to write. I'm never not thinking about something. I just finished school. I just actually made a movie. We were talking about this. I'm looking for work. I'm broke as shit, unemployed. You know, I'm just making movies. I call it my train set, you know, just kind of doing my thing. You know, yeah, I get about me. I don't know. Yeah, I just, I really like doing this. I was really excited to talk about doing it. That's really nice. Cool. But yeah, no, I guess I'm a writer. I'm a writer and a director. I direct so I can see the things that I like come to life because no one else is going to do it. And, right. You know, that's it's kind of me just constantly kind of dreaming.
So when did you start getting into writing, though?
Oh, man, I've always been into writing. I remember being in like elementary school and being told to like write a short story for the first time. And I think like that was an insanely formative moment. I think I wrote about people on a boat. I think was the first like original thing I ever wrote. I don't know what it was about, but I was hooked from that moment on. And like, you know, I would do that. And like, as a kid, I wrote a little bit and then, you know, I turned into like a cynical teenager and all that stuff and went off and for 15 years of my life, just didn't write a word, just talked about writing. Okay. I would sometimes get down and get, you know, write some stuff. And then I think I was about 25 and I went, man, you're so full of shit. Like maybe start actually writing instead of just talking about it. And then I started writing about sports. You know, I was super into basketball and I wrote a lot of basketball, wrote a lot of articles. I had the opportunity to write for like a really small publication that since on produced a podcast for them. And I was like, oh, I like to write the news. So I ended up going to school for like journalism and stuff like that. But I think last year I had written other stuff or tried, but I mean, there was no commitment. And then I think like last year I was like, no, I'm going to do it. I'm going to really do it. And so for any year, I guess that's where I'm at now. It's just really taking it seriously and trying to craft.
Were you like afraid of success with writing, or was it just something that you knew you liked to do, but you weren't sure if it like was something that you wanted to really take serious?
It's a really interesting question. I think I made a lot of excuses to not pursue it. I think that would be the way that I would describe it. Okay. I think like I knew I wanted to do it, but there was this pragmatism in me that was like, no way that that's going to ever sustain you. Like that, no one cares. No one cares how good of a writer you are. No one gives a shit. So it's like, well, okay. Like, and you know, you watch how journalism has kind of gone the way of the dodo in a lot of ways. And it's really sad. You
Absolutely.
Know? And it's not that journalism is bad. It's just that people don't respect it. And so, I mean, that's like the, you know, really the big thing. It's like, we don't respect people who put the work in.
Right.
And, but nonfiction, you know, writing fiction, like that became sort of as like, I mean, I was married at one point and I remember trying to bring up the idea of doing that. And I, you know, I'm not married anymore.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Like, so I don't think like it's ever been something that anyone ever had faith in me to do. And I think it took me having like, I guess, faith in myself being like, you know what? I don't need to support anyone but me creatively. And I think that's what kind of was like, you need to just nut up and do it.
Right. So I have a few of Trevor's films that I've been watching, and they're short films. The first one I watched, we were talking about A Man in the Alley, and I really like that short film. It was very creepy. I love the costume, and you guys will be able to see the film. Everything will be in the link of this video, and you guys go and check out the films that Trevor has done so far. You said you've only like professionally like done this for a year. You said a man in the alley is the first one that you've done. Can you tell us a little bit about that film and the backstory, how you came up with that premise?
Yeah. Professionally, that's very flattering.
Well, you're welcome. It's true though. It's very true.
Thank you. It had come from, you know, they tell you when you're making your movies or when you're going to go off to make a movie, like never make your first script. And like,
okay.
Totally did that. Totally went the first thing I wrote. I have mixed feelings about it now, being a year separated from it. But I had thought of an idea that involved like an alien and all this stuff. And then it ended up becoming A Man in the Alley. And it happened because I was out in my alleyway and I was just hanging out, having a drink. And I saw somebody who was I was sitting down. And this person came from around the corner and they were in that garb. Like what you really? See in the is not too much of a departure from this person that walked out from behind a car and like straight up to my face and started picking the cigarette butts up off the ground in front of my feet. Now, obviously an unfortunate situation, but like, you know, but it scared the shit out of me. And I went like, man, what if that person came for you? Like, and it kind of was able to take the other idea I was working on. And I thought to myself, if you want to make a horror movie and you've never made a horror movie before, let's try like a ghost in a white sheet and then see if we can make that work too. And, you know, I went and I bought a bedspread and some spray paint. And
yeah, you did a great job. Like, honestly,
her name is Jennifer Young. She's out in Yuba City. She's amazing effects artist. She fine-tuned that. I mean, she took that thing and she made it. She really brought it. And it is a gorgeous costume.
It really is. I think that the costume alone and seeing that thing just slowly dragging this piece, this costume that it's wearing, and then there's no face there, and how it comes up to you and it's just staring at you or staring at the character. There's just so many questions of, okay, what is it doing? Why is it following this person? But the costume got me because I remember thinking and pausing it and just looking at it and thinking to myself, that is so creepy. The costume alone is just so creepy in the way that it was done. It was just a great idea to have a horror film that there was no blood, there was no guts. It was just this thing that was following the character, and you guys will watch the movie and see, and you find out what ends up happening to that character, and just a great idea. Ask like, how long did it take to come up, you know, to shoot that and the, you know,
so the pre-production on that is probably one of the most like important things that I think has ever happened to me as a person. Every other than the person under the sheet, him and I have known each other for a long, long, long time, over a decade. Very good friends, very close friends. Everybody else in that movie, I did not know until I started to make that movie. I didn't know any of them. They were all strangers. And Ethan, who helped pre-produce that film, lives really close to me. And, you know, over the course of the year, like him, I am very close to him. I find him to be just, you know, he's just kept me level, kept my head out of the clouds, you know, and allowed me to make that movie be as good as it was. And I'm so grateful for that. But I built a community out of that movie for myself. I mean, that already existed, but I was able to join a community of people like Austin. And, you know, the other person did the sound, Federico, and just everybody there I didn't know. And I bonded with them through the actors were two stand-up comedians, Parker Newman and Roman Spinelli are stand-up comedians. And I casted that movie by going to an open mic night and waiting for the two most miserable sets I could hear. And then asking them if they'd be in my movie because I needed two miserable dudes. And best friends or like, you know, really like, well, this works. This is great. And I cast them and they jumped on board and they committed. So you never get that with free talent. I was so like lucky with how that all worked out. And for the cinematographer, Sam Graydon, I have not worked, unfortunately, I haven't had the chance to work with him again, but he didn't know me. I found him on Google.
Did you really?
I Googled cinematographer.
Because I was going to ask you, like, how do you collaborate with like the cinematographer to achieve like the visual style that you wanted, you know?
He taught me. I mean, I did a lot of preparation and like drew storyboards out, and I knew the shots I wanted. Like I knew where I wanted things to be, but he was able to digest that in real time. And we shot that movie over 2 days, two nights. Okay. And I had to wheel and deal with the bar to get the bar to let me shoot back there. He's still pissed off until they close about me banging that the heater. He hated that. They're out of business now. Who won?
right.
But it was just it was really crazy. It was kind of like a whirlwind, and then it just like, and there was so much. I gave myself 2 months to prep, and then when it was all done, I was not prepared for like the come down off that.
Okay.
And I've come down off some things before, and I've never come down off something. And that was absolutely fucking insane. And I just remember I knew I would do it forever, even if it meant nothing. Okay. I would just never not do it again. But yeah, that whole experience making that film was really formative for me.
I was going to ask you, like, once you saw it, when you saw your finished product, like what, like, and this is you who, you know, was going to do it, not going to do it, like everything that you've gone through, and then get to a point to where, okay, I wrote it and I found the people I wanted, it's done. How did that make you feel as a new director, writer that finished a project?
Yes, that was awesome. It was so cool.
I bet.
But on the other side, I had made something like extremely vulnerable and like really like super personal and a little whiny. And I think like when I go back and I look at it now, you know, I've kind of like, you know, I've moved forward just like you move on from any project or whatever, but it was very specific to a very specific time. And it's obvious, right? Like, I mean, it's just like, it's wearing itself on its sleeve. And I look back at that with some admiration. And then I'm just kind of like, God, don't fucking talk about it.
I get you. I think as, at least for me as an actress, to see yourself in a film on screen. And once you watch it, for me, I'm like, Or you know, you pick apart little things, and it's just like you said, you want to move on from that, learn from whatever it is that I didn't like or whatnot, and just do better. But it's just so it's satisfying to get done. But then when you go back and look at it, you're like, for me, I'm like pointing out, you know, I think we tend to be our hardest critics because we are sharing our talent with the world. And how do you deal with the criticism if at all you've had any?
I think I just felt really naked.
Okay. Yes. Okay.
Like, I think that would be, I felt really naked. And then I was like, I rushed to kind of make Margarita Kill like pretty quickly after. Cause I was like, let's just brutalize someone's face.
I can't believe, you know, like I get you feel that way about the film, but I'm telling you, I've shown this movie to my producer. Please watch this. First one I showed him was the Man in the Alley, because I just really liked it. I thought it was just really good, and showed it to my husband, talked to him about it, and was like, you got to see this film. Like, this guy's super talented. Like, tell me what you think about this film. And he watched it and was like, dude, that was freaking creepy. And we discussed it and everything. So as someone who's watching it as a fan, I thought you did really good. Now you bring up Margarita Kills, which is totally different. Let's talk about Margarita Kills. How long after you finished A Man in the Alley, did you already have that script written, or was that, you know?
I was going to do a movie about a guy who eats his friend's chest over a preseason game, like a preseason football game.
Okay.
And, you know, I spent like $1,000 on shit. You know, I was just like, do it. And the day before the shoot, I lost cinematographer and, you know, such as, and so sent a lot of stuff back to Amazon, took a pretty big loss. And I was like, and I had this itch. I was like, I have to fucking make something. I can't just sit here. So I cranked out, I can't remember what the impetus was for the movie, but I really dislike Jimmy Buffett. Like,
really?
I don't like listening to Jimmy Buffett. And I was like, the worst. And we must have been drinking or something. I was like, could you imagine if you had to die to Jimmy Buffett? And and I was like, oh man. And then my wheel started to turn. And then I started to think about, I don't know if you're familiar with the original Django.
No, I've only saw the remake.
In the original Django, he drags around a coffin, and inside of that coffin is a Gatling gun. And I've always loved that imagery of someone dragging around a coffin with this insane weapon inside.
Okay.
I was like, well, I could do that with a cooler and a blender and a guy in a parrot mask.
Oh my gosh, that was, let me tell
It's
you, the yeah, I'm like,
That's
his
Dan Acosta.
mind, like,
That's
what the
Dan.
hell?
All credit goes to Dan on that movie. I mean, he just did amazing effects work. You know,
Yes,
it's
yes,
just gorgeous. It's
yes.
beautiful. Like, and that's the first movie I ever shot myself. That's the first time I ever held
Okay.
I had my own camera, but I would always just hand it off to somebody else. You know,
Okay.
how to do this. I don't. I know how to write and I know what I want. But like,
Right.
that was the first time I held the camera and shot something. So for me, that was just like another way to learn. And I wanted to
Okay.
do effects and I wanted to do action and I want things to be kind of visceral and tongue in cheek. And I was kind of
Right.
trying to own that idea, I
Yeah,
guess.
I was looking at, there's a scene in the film where the guy's eye is come out of his eye socket and it's just hanging there. And I'm one of those people when I watch horror films, I'm looking to see if I can find any problem or can I see where whatever the effects were done quite well. You know, they were done really good. It
Very
didn't
good.
take you out of the film. But then when the film ends, and I won't tell you guys how the film ends, but when it does end, I will say that the song comes on, Margarita, Bill. And let me tell you, just a side story. So I used to live in Seaside, Oregon, and there, and I worked as a hostess in a bar, and then at night I'd go and do some cocktailing. There was a band, a live band that played every night, and I'm telling you, every night they ended with that freaking song. For 3 years, I would every night they would end with that song. So when that song came on at the end, I kind of tweaked a little because
I
it's been
don't
a
blame you.
while, but it
I think
took me
that's
back to that damn song.
right. You know,
Yes.
you're my target demographic. I
Oh
hate
my
that. Oh,
gosh.
you know, times I had to listen to that thing, editing the movie too. It's just
Oh,
like.
I bet. You know how many times I'd have to, and I knew last song of the night, and I'm telling the locals loved it, and they'd wait for him to sing it. But as a cocktail server in that bar and knowing that that song's coming on. So when I watch that film and it ends with that, first of all, I'm laughing because the film's good, but then that song comes on and I just kind of tweak and it took me back to that freaking song. So I get you just a second. I have someone here. Let's see. What's up, JoJo? And she says, hi, Rossi and Trevor. Hi, Joanne. Thanks for tuning in. Joanne's one of our biggest fans here. She makes sure she never misses a show. Thank you, JoJo. We really appreciate you tuning in
Thank
tonight.
you.
There's another one. Thank you so much. Okay, so the newest film that we have is It'll Be All Right.
You'll be all right.
You'll Be All Right. Did you say that one you're still working on, or is that one?
Yeah, I'm doing some sound design and then a little color grading on it. So it'll be a little more polished than it is now, but it's pretty much how it's going to be.
The idea, where did that idea come from? Because I told you backstage when I saw that, when I watched that one, and you have a gentleman that he's been out of work, he's looking for jobs. I love as he's going through the process of the application process and on his computer, and it's so funny because then it's a no, then it's a hell no, then it's a no, you asshole, then it's a whatever. But it resonated with me because I'm in that position right now, and saw the film, so I'm like, oh my God, what, how did you come up with that one?
A long time ago, I had thought of just doing like this like 1 minute thing where somebody gets a knock on their door and that knock just gets closer to their bedroom. Like they're lying there at night and they get a knock on their door and they open the door, there's nobody there. And then they go into the bathroom and they're using the bathroom before they go to bed and somebody knocks in the bathroom and there's nobody there. Then they go to bed and then they hear a knock on the door and then there's a guy at the bedroom. And I was just like an idea to like kind of just play with like doing like a jump scare, like, oh, well, how do you do this? Like working in threes. And I was just trying to be kind of technical about it.
Right.
And then I made that, I wrote that movie 4.5 weeks ago.
Okay.
I wrote
Dang.
it and shot it a week later. And
Wow.
that's the and then edited it in about a week and it's already there. I mean, it just like that thing kind of just I had another idea I was working on, and then that one kind of slid in. I was like, hey, I can do this now.
Right.
People hopped on, and you know, Zach was there, Ethan was
Right.
there. Michael's an amazing actor. He plays the older gentleman in the movie. He's just
Okay.
a gem. And then, yeah, no, I just, it was a really cool experience. I had my friends come and help out. And like, that movie was really just birthed from, again, I need to do something.
Okay.
I'm working on a larger project and it, you know, you're doing something larger. It requires more time and patience. And I don't have that. I'm a big fan of instant gratification. So it's like, I'm gonna make something now. And this was interesting because it's the first time I ever edited a movie alone. You know, and I try to use each movie as an excuse to find a new technique to use and, you know, try to, you know, make the story better. But this one a lot more personal. And I think you had asked me who the older gentleman is supposed to be. And that's it's a very interesting question. There is a lot of stuff in the movie, and maybe I'll come to find that it's pretentious. I'm not sure. There are a lot of things. You'll notice a picture of a boy and his father. There's this sort of, you know, these pictures and these little things. And for me, there's a lot of stuff from my grandparents around in the film. And that's not really for the audience, I guess. I mean, it adds something, I guess, if you know that. But the hope is that it elicits sort of like an old feeling. And you kind of feel like this person's old and you see this old man. And it's the idea, not necessarily that it's a ghost. Well, it's a ghost. Okay. Clearly a ghost, somebody's been there before. You talked about how like you related to the film and I, you know, it, like about it being about finding a job. And it's the idea that like everybody has been.
Yes.
There. It doesn't matter who this guy is or who he isn't. He's been there before and he's watching him and he knows that he's been there. And he's just like, I might be deader than dog shit, but I've been here before. And you know, you don't know what ghost is going to come haunt you.
Right.
It could be like a bystander. He's got nothing to do that week in spirit land and he wants to hang out and make sure you'll be all right.
And that's what's great about it is watching it a second time through. Remember, I told you the first time through, I didn't really notice the older man that was everywhere this guy was. So I watched it the second time. And it is one of those films where you probably watch it one or two times because you see things that you maybe didn't pay attention to. So second time around, I'm watching. I'm like, that's the guy at the end of the film. And then I see him there and I see him everywhere this guy is. And then eventually he is where he is at the end of the film. But I like that because I didn't see it. And then when I saw it, I'm like, okay. So I took him as a ghost, but he wasn't like a horrible ghost or he wasn't there to hurt him, just, you know. And then at the end of the film, you feel good because you didn't realize everything will be all right.
Yeah, yeah. And it's funny. I should call attention to the grammar of the title. Like I didn't know this at first. So I figured this out in the process. But we always want to write all right like that. But like to say like you're going to be all right would be A-L-L space. Right. But I do it like you'll be all right. Like,
yeah.
You're not going to be great.
Yeah. Yeah. But you'll be all right. But you'll be all right. Yeah. Like I said, it resonated with me because when I saw that and I'm like, yeah, I'm actually going through that right now. And yes, I will be. I absolutely will be. What's your creative process like, though?
Well, manic. I don't think I think a psychiatrist would probably tell me to stop. I think this year I've written at least 7 shorts and I also wrote a feature this year. So I also wrote a feature. I think it worked out to be about 300 pages from when I wrote to now. And like, I don't know if that's a lot or whatever, but that's what I've done.
Okay.
And I just don't stop. Like if I'm not like right now, I'm kind of in a cool down. I just finished that one. It's in post. Other people are working on it. I'm pretty creatively fulfilled today, but I'm starting to feel this like need to go and I'll get back down on the computer and either find something that I've already written to tinker with or to write something completely new because I've procrastinate. And I think I write a lot because I don't want to go back and tinker with something and I write something new. And I don't know if that's good, but.
Are you, so your films, so far all your films have been something that dealt with, it's in like the horror film or thriller category.
Yeah.
Is your favorite type of films, are they horror films? Do you have any directors like horror film,
Clive Barker?
I'm thinking of music, Clive Barker.
Yeah. That's a really good question.
Thank you.
Yeah, totally. I love garbage. Like, I love bad horror movies a lot.
Okay.
But I also like Sam Raimi, and, you know, you go back to Evil Dead. I don't think there's many movies that are more like formidable for me than like Evil Dead.
Oh yeah.
I'm put on the spot with these questions, but it always kind of always comes back to horror can be horrific.
Yes.
And also be an experience, and it can also be a good time.
Yeah.
But I do also find value in like the punishing types of horror where they're psychologically like you're being dragged through. And you could go back to like OGs, but I always find a hard time in the moment to like say who I love the most. But like, I think it always kind of goes back to Sam Raimi. And it's not that even his movies are my favorite horror movies. Okay. I mean, I love Evil Dead. That's really important to me. That's
absolutely.
I was to like make a list of the greatest horror movies ever made. It might make the top 10. I don't even know if it would be the greatest horror movie ever made. I don't know, but I love the hands-on do-it-yourself renegade style of making a movie. I don't have access to CGI. I'm not going to ever use artificial intelligence. I'm not going to use these things to make my projects. And I love when you can take something and do it in camera and do a magic trick. I don't know. That's what I want to do. I don't know if I pulled that off yet, but I certainly like, that's the hope, is to just go back to like roots, practical, like guerrilla style filmmaking and just.
Okay.
You know.
I was, I don't know if you saw, I was talking to the ladies last week, Lauren and Lorna, and we were talking about the horror film Smile, because I love horror films. And I'm sure if you've seen that, what I loved about that was the psychological, it was just a smile, like the horror film was just a smile. That was the entity in the film. And, you know, I never really seen something like that. And I remember hearing about this film and like Smile, what is that? And it was just very interesting. Do you like films like that, that it doesn't take a lot of blood and gore? It's just more of a,
yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't mind the blood and gore. Like, I love the Hellraisers and all that. But when I saw that, it was just the premise of a smile. When you saw that, what did you think about that? Would you do something like that? Sorry, so many questions on top of questions.
No, totally. No, you're fine. I love when people can take something as simple as a smile and find a way to craft it into a sinister character arc.
Right.
That to me is really talented. I love the blood and guts as much as the next guy. I do have an affinity though for, I like the emotional side to horror.
Yeah.
Like when I was younger, I didn't really like movies like The Exorcist. I didn't like the ones that really got into being a human in a horrific situation. As I'm older, I guess, I don't think I've accomplished it yet, but maybe more so with You're All Right. I don't know. But like, I want to do human shit. Like I want horrible situations, but humans.
Right. No, right.
But like, you know, we sometimes see movies like, you know, like a movie like Malignant, right? And then it's just turns into a cartoon. Like a really awesome, great time. Like, no doubt. But like, and even with Smile kind of does that too. But when, I really love restraint, like that Hitchcockian restraint.
Oh, okay.
Where you sort of have this larger thing looming over these characters that are forced to deal with stuff that like they're learning on the fly, but the audience knows what's up before they do. And I just think all those things lend themselves to just like allowing actors to scare the shit out of your audience. And I think a person's performance will stick with you much longer than a jump scare or
Norman Bates, you know, that you know, we were talking about the film The Birds, you know, and how that's a film with regular people and they're just being attacked by these birds, and that's the scare of the film are these birds. And whoever would have thought that a film would be so, I've seen it so many times because I just find it to be just such a great film. And what a premise to have birds, not blood, not gore, but birds. But I love that old style and that, like you said, the Alfred Hitchcock. And then you get into your Twilight Zone, the old school Twilight Zone, where they give you a little short story.
That's Roger Serling, by
Yes, absolutely.
I think I credit most of like my process to Roger
Okay.
Serling. I think that the Twilight Zone finds a way to tap into the mundane and to take the mundane and to make it come after you. I know Black Mirror does it with technology, but I really like when, the thing that I'm working on now is about like a worm that gets inside of a hot dog and like takes over a guy. And it's the idea that you could get the last hot dog at the gas station and it'll fucking make you kill yourself.
See,
So like,
that's I
and like I think and I that's what I look for. You ask, I guess, to answer the process, I look for an in with something that isn't supposed to scare you, like, I
Okay.
guess, or isn't supposed to have any like emotional effect, and trying to find a way to have that be really profound.
Right. I go back to the Twilight Zone because some of the episodes they have, it could be ones where it's scary, but it makes you think. I remember watching an episode where I forget the name of the episode, but at the end of the episode, it ends up being that it was an alien little girl that was that the people were the Barbies, the figures that she was playing with. And I remember when the camera pans out and you see her, could you hear giggling throughout the whole this whole the whole short of that episode? You hear a little girl giggling and you see the people looking around. You never know who it is, and then at the end you see who it is, and she's on another planet playing with the humans on Earth. What
So
a
cool.
great premise. Or the little boy that has the little fake phone and his grandma dies, and
She's calling.
you hear his phone ring, the fake phone ring. For
Mine
me
is
as a kid, that was creepy.
the one that always sticks with me the most is the episode where it's like they're in suburban America, they're having game night with like the couples and the families are all together having game night around the table, and the nuclear sirens go off, and in the house is a bunker, and like it's that family's house's bunker, and they go in there, but they won't let their friends in the bunker. And the friends start trying to break down the door to get into the bunker because they're like, we're gonna die, we're gonna die. And like, once humanity has collapsed to its like peak, the siren goes, this was just a drill, this was just a drill. And now you fucking live with each other forever. And I'm like, that's horrifying. I've insane social anxiety. So when I see that happen, I'm like, that's the nightmare, man. That's it, Losing my glasses in the apocalypse, I could fix that, but I can't fix my neighbor.
I remember that, losing the glasses, that episode, the guy that loved to read the books and ends up in this world by himself where he's surrounded by many books, and then his glasses break.
Nothing but time.
No, nothing but time. Yes. So are there other movies that you can think of that influenced, okay, I want to take that and I want to play around with that premise.
Yeah, I think like in long form, the City of God hit me like a ton of bricks when I was like, when the movie, I think it came out in 2006 or five or something. I remember being like 15 or 14 when I saw it. I saw story. To me, I just see storytelling from like the most pure, and then being able to take these diversions that add to the story, but it's a totally isolated thing within your movie, and you have this sort of self-contained, like at one point in City of God, this whole epic's playing out, and then they're talking about this apartment and all the people that have sold drugs in this apartment and like when it started, and they go back in time and they're moving back forward, and then they do this in about 4 minutes. We get this massive story, tons of information, all this context, and it's so kinetic and it's so cool, and it just opens back up into the movie and you're trucking again. And it's like being able to like throw wrenches into stories with more stories has always been really cool to me. So like when I do long form, I've gravitated toward like a lot of characters, like not just when I do shorts, I try to make them more intimate and like focused on one or two people, but I like that sort of ensemble cast where you don't quite sure. It's sort of an eggshell game, who is the main character, and allowing that to be the tension. And I think that's a cool thing with City of God, is because you're more focused on who the you know, who the antagonist is, and it's clear, then it's not clear, and it's a pretty cool movie. But that was a huge one for me. And Touch of Evil, always really, Orson Welles, Touch of Evil, always really stuck with me. Just about crooked cops. I mean, super dated, but it's really cool. Once Upon a Time in the West, probably.
Yes, yep.
And that's another big epic where you sort of have all these people just conniving. You know, there's kind of a MacGuffin, but like everyone's working. Fargo. Oh gosh, man.
Like, Fargo.
Those to me are honestly like horror films in their own way, because it's just all these people trying to navigate this shit.
Yes, yes. I remember I didn't watch Fargo for years after it came out, because I didn't think it would be something I was into, and I ended up watching it, and wow, what a great story. But the storytelling, like you're saying, there's so many different characters that have so many things going on. I see why they would make it into a series. And so far, everyone I've watched, I think there was one season I didn't like, but everyone I watched, I have to say, I love the way that they tell their stories. And I love that there's many different characters and many different, you know, storylines going on, but it all comes around to one person and who did it and whatnot. So I always look forward to that. I wanted to ask you, out of the three films that you made so far, which one would you say was the most challenging one so far that you've made?
Oh, I would say the first one, just because I literally didn't know what I was doing. You know, I don't know if that makes it harder or easier. I don't know.
Yeah, because you think, yeah, well.
There was a lot of I put a lot of pressure on myself for the first one.
Okay.
And I think this is like a little PSA for anybody out there about to make their first movie. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. And you got to manage yourself, because I held myself to an unachievable standard. You know, you have these expectations of what it's going to look like. If I do the thing and I bring the people in and I make it look like this, it's going to be this. And it's probably not going to be that. I mean, we don't have resources. We don't have things. And, you know, I think that was I made the movie, I finished it, and man, is it as good as it could possibly have gotten. And that's, I'm so grateful for that. But like, it was a wake up call. It was like, this is what this is going to be. And that's a good thing. That's not any criticism toward anyone's time or talent.
Right.
Everybody, we are garage band filmmakers in large part. And everything that we're doing, everyone is learning. Even if none of us were learning, we'd all be pros and probably paid and not filming movies in my alleyway, which I've made three there now. And but again, though, it is so cool to team up with people that are all just at that level, and there's no pressures, right? You don't have a producer breathing down your neck. You just get to go make the movie with your friends.
Right.
You know, just make the movie with your friends, make what you can make. But I didn't see it right away. I felt like I had a responsibility, and you do as a director to some degree, but like, I thought I was going to get something that certainly wasn't going to happen now.
Okay.
That was like, oh shit, here's the real world.
So like, as a writer and as a director, do you stick to the script when you're filming? Are you one of those that just stick straight to the script while shooting, you know?
No, I think, now I've only done one movie with dialogue. I guess.
Very true.
But that was a huge learning experience, and I think it might have scared me from. I mean, when I write other stuff, there's tons of dialogue. I just haven't shot anything with dialogue. I definitely allowed a lot more freedom, and I think that's really important to let go of the material and for the sake of collaboration.
Okay.
Ultimately, you're the director. I mean, if you don't like it, you don't like it, but if what they're doing is making your vision better, you're foolish to not listen. Like, you're foolish to not listen. You're foolish to not try it. In Man in the Alley, the opening part of the movie, what I had written dialogue-wise was really repetitive. It was saying a lot of the same information over and over and over again. And I remember the night we were filming, the cinematographer is like, man, this sucks. And I'm like, yeah, really, it really does kind of suck. And so we just had him improv it. Like, just okay. You know what the scene is, just go for it, you right. know? And that's the scene that made, that's the take that made the cut, because right. what I wrote sucked. And I mean, it was just like watching that happen and you're like, oh man. And you know, that was night of the shoot. That was, you know, I only get these guys for, you know, and
right.
I think, but then again, you may have a project or something where the dialogue is carefully crafted and those things really matter and okay. you won't. So I'm definitely open to it, but it's certainly, it's a situational.
Right.
Yeah.
Where do you see yourself? I love to ask artists in 5 years. Usually it's usually you have a 5-year goal of, okay, if I'm not, where do you see yourself in 5 years? Where do you want your films to be?
I'm never going to stop doing this. I'm going to work. I'm going to have normal people jobs.
Right.
But doing this kind of saved me. I'll never let it go. I spent 15 years making excuses to not do it.
Right.
And life is short. Yeah. And I don't have a goal. Okay. I just want it to make a movie, always be making a movie.
Right.
And of course, always improving as a filmmaker and as a writer and right. building out a bigger community. Those things matter to me. Like, that's what matters. Right. I think the film industry is pretty unachievable. I think making it or doing that, it's just, I don't know that's unachievable. I just, it can't be something that I can give a shit about. I just right. need to, I just want to make the movie. I just want to make right. the movie, I wanna make, you know, make friends and build a community and, you know, hopefully people resonate with the passion that I bring to it. I mean, that's, I think that's what's important. I don't know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with you. And when I got back into this, I was giving myself goals, 5-year goal, you know, if I'm not whatever. And then after a while, you know, when you get back into it and being an artistic person, I just love it. Just let me create, you know what I mean? Just, you know, and you're right, after a certain point, you really don't care because what you're doing is working. And so trying to be where, you know, A level, whatever, that those things kind of go out the window for some. I know for me, for podcasting, for instance, I didn't know I was one that could sit and talk. You know, I've always been very quiet, very into, you know, my acting. And then I got into this and I just was like, wow, I love this new form of entertainment, you know, awesome. And I just want to be able to do it.
Cool. Yeah.
You know, I just want to be able to do it, you know,
same.
That's plain and simple, you know, and I hope people like it, you know.
Truly, yeah. I mean, that's
you know, I really do.
My analytics say most people don't like what I make, so like, I just like, it's all good.
So let's talk about what you have going on.
Yeah.
What do you have going on now that you'd like to speak about? Share with us.
So, I'm working on a movie. It's about an alien worm that falls into the last hot dog at a gas station. Okay. And a guy who is not too dissimilar from Ben Shapiro eats it and it makes him kill him. There's a lot more to that, but I had this idea. I was like, I would love to take a Ben Shapiro type and put a parasite in his brain and have him kill himself. But there is actually a really cool little like emotional story in there. Like, it's not
okay.
not for Ben Shapiro.
Okay. Yes. Not
Ben Shapiro. I'll be very clear. It's not Ben Shapiro.
Okay.
But it's the closest, but you know, I can't find a good Tucker Carlson or I'd use him, but you know,
right.
I can play Ben Shapiro. And, but I want to play around with a worm and I want to do all practical effects with this worm. And I like the idea of having this parasite. There's always that question. If Alien could come down right now and see our political like state, like how would it react? And I think that's probably how it would react.
Okay. You have to definitely shoot that over. I would love to see that when it's done. Are we in the midst of that? Is that something that you're...
Worms are being made right now as we speak.
Wow.
They're kind of like an Arctic lamprey in a way.
Okay.
And they're
big.
They're about this big. They're going to have wires in there. We're going to do a lot of reverse photography. And this is where I'm like, we're talking about Evil Dead. So I'm going to get in like Evil Dead bag and do a lot of stuff. Coming out of the mouth, I'm going to have it fly back up into space from this body. And hopefully it's cool. I really hope it's cool. I'm going to drive over his head a bunch.
I love it. I can't wait to see it. I'm looking forward to it. You'll definitely have to share so that I can share with the audience.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, I didn't get to ask you this. You're always writing and you're doing, you're directing, and but for fun, what does Trevor do for fun? Do you take time off? Do you go and hang out at the beach? Do you skateboard? Do you play b-ball? Like, do you play video games? Like, what do you do for fun?
I really kind of found, I mean, I like exercise and I do that stuff, but like, I've found that my fun every day has kind of been either getting through school, you know, other shit, job, trying to find a job. And for fun for me is being able to do this. This is this is the fun I have, is being able to talk to other people who want to make stuff.
Awesome.
I mean, if I could fill every moment of my day with talking to like another creative or somebody who's curious or wants to do something, that's fun for me. And when I can't find somebody to talk to about it or do anything, I either pester my friends and make them listen to me for way too long, or I write. And I mean, I get a lot of intrinsic joy out of creating, because like it just feels like it's been something I should have been doing for myself a long time ago. So I just feel like I'm nurturing myself when I do it.
That's awesome. Midnight Cinema has a question. He wants to know, will that film be a short film or a feature length film? Good question, Midnight Cinema.
Thank you. That will be likely a short. Okay. I would like to think of it as a proof of concept. When I did Margarita Kill, I had done that for a proof of concept. I actually had a larger idea called Pandemonium, because a flock of parrots is called a pandemonium.
Oh, really?
And
okay.
I was going to do this movie where these parrots attack a bunch of kids like at a rave. And they're like baby boomers coming after these people that are mad that they lost their parrot head festival to the rave. And they're going to come kill them. But it seemed in poor taste, so I didn't do it now, maybe some other time. But so like, I'm back on the proof of concept wagon. So to answer the question in short, I'd imagine, yeah, like a 15 minute, but with the hope that I could do an alien invasion movie. And it sounds a lot like Slither when I say it out loud, but this idea where these worms come down and just start taking all these crazy January Sixers just seems like a great time to me.
So
the direction I would go, just like the idea of like a worm infestation at the RNC just sounds.
Oh, wow. Cool. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Freaking awesome. I've enjoyed you. I've had a great time. I'm so happy that you were able to come on the show. I was looking forward to it. Shout outs. Anything else?
No, I mean, anybody who helped me, you know, make a movie, Zach, Austin, Ethan, Fed, Anthony, Erica, you know, everybody. But Dan Acosta, the makeup man, I mean, he's responsible for the feet and the eyeballs, like, you know.
Okay.
He's just, Dan's the man. Jennifer for the costume, but, you know, if anybody helped me get here, I mean, I'm cool. Like,
Thank you all.
Thank you all.
So, guys, this is Trevor Harris. He is in a director and he's a writer here in Sacramento. Hopefully he'll stay for a while, because he's a Rolling Stone. He travels a lot. He's here and he's there, but he's in Sacramento right now. He's enjoying Sacramento. A lot of his films are made here in Sacramento. So you guys, all of his info will be in the link to this video. And I'll be sharing some shorts with you soon. I really appreciate you guys tuning in. And for those that are listening, thank you guys for tuning in, listening. Please give Rossi's Clubhouse a 5-star review. Let me know what you think about Rossi's Clubhouse. And I have a lot of great talent that will be coming on in April in Rossi's Clubhouse. So thank you so much. Please hit the subscribe. Please like. Inbox me at rossisclubhouse@gmail.com. Also, you can catch me on Rossi Talks Wednesday nights. Guys, this Wednesday, I have a video game show coming up. All the guys are coming back. We have Jason. We have Don Tucker. We have Trust. And we're going to do some gaming news. There's so much that's going on in gaming. So we're going to talk about some news and what's new in gaming. Also, on April 1st, I will be with John DeGregorio for Movie Lovers Unite, and we will finally be reviewing a throwback movie, Twister. Is it Twister or whatever? Anyways.
You ever know that Twister is His Girl Friday?
No.
Yeah, watch His Girl Friday, then watch Twister.
Okay. All right. All right. All right. We'll be watching that movie on April 1st. And on April 17th, guys, I will be with John DeGregorio, Beth, and Backlook Cinema, and we're all going to be discussing the Breakfast Club. Okay, so there's a lot to come. Thank you so much, guys, and we look forward to seeing you all next time. Again, this is Trevor Harris. He has a lot of great ideas and a lot of good movies that he's going to be bringing us. I will share. Thank you, guys. Bye.
Pete Rose logged more hits in baseball history than anyone else. No one has come close to breaking his record. But he was also at the center of one of the game's biggest scandals, a scandal that changed baseball forever. In the new book, Charlie Hustle, New York Times bestselling author Keith O'Brien chronicles Pete Rose's spectacular rise and fall. Drawing on firsthand interviews with Rose himself and his associates, this is Pete Rose as we've never seen him before. Buy Charlie Hustle, available wherever books are sold.